Accession number 13360, Major D. Tomlinson, Reel 5.
Major D. Tomlinson, Reel 5. The journey up into Iraq, Major, what happened?
Was done on a daily basis and encamped every night. Then the intelligence of section under myself then went ahead and wrecked the next area. Of course, the battalion was on wheels and it moved in formation, not in a line ahead or anything like that, but in proper formation, just in case we had any enemy bombers or aircrafts that were around that might have a go at us. So, as you can picture, in open desert, you moved in open formation.
This would be widespread.
On wheels, that's right, yes. But we, the intelligence officers, had gone ahead, and of course he had no formation or speed or anything to maintain, and got there first and in time to recce the ground for that night's stay. And the rest of the battalion encamped and was fed and slept ready for the next night. And off we repeated the same again, until we arrived
Did you essentially follow the pipeline?
Generally, yes, that's true. Yes, we did. We did follow the pipeline. And of course there were tracks in the sand that where people had gone, so it left you the idea, the right idea. You knew where you were going or where you were heading, and of course the not very far distance outside Baghdad was the RAF base, and that is where we pulled up for a major stay outside this RAF base. Can't remember his name. Huh? Terrible. Eventually we arrived outside a very large built-up area incorporating the RAF base at Abanya. We then dispersed the troops and had a ...48-hour rest before proceeding on our way.
How were you received at the base?
We didn't go in. We did. A few officers contacted the RAF there, but we were outside in the open. No, it was there's quite a number of troops around. But this wasn't flat ground, which one would expect in a desert, you know. This is anything but. It was slightly hilly, and there were creeks, and we had the experience of we lived in tents with 12 men in each tent, and that's where they slept and rested. But we were wide open to bow to thieves, and so we had 2 people on sentry duty in each tent for a 2-hour shift on guard, and then they handed over to somebody else. But it didn't matter. In that time, we lost a number of rifles. These robbers, of course, were incredibly canny. Moved stealthily, and there was a hue and cry. Of course, people wanted to court-martial people who had their rifles stolen round the back of the tent. These people used to crawl around the tent and manage to ease a rifle away from the soldier, who had it strapped to his wrist. Vivid memory I have of this, because we were knowledgeable of what the dangers were when we were encamped there, and we've been warned by the RAF people that you couldn't leave anything about anywhere without being stolen, and yet with guards, 2 people in each tent on guard, we still lost 2 rifles. I think it was 2.
The men were not punished, though, were they?
Sorry?
The men weren't punished.
No, they weren't. They were going to be, but of course it was a wartime situation. If it had been peacetime, they would have been court-martialed, because nobody's allowed to lose firearms. It's property of His Majesty the King. However, we did. And there was a big hue and cry about it. And of course, senior officers tried to calm it down, because they didn't want it to get out, really. But you couldn't get away from the fact. But because we were at war situation, and we were moving on the next day, it became paperwork only, if you know what I mean, and got lost in the paper. Nicest way to put it, I suppose. There were reprimands, of course, but there really was nothing further.
Had you to go through Baghdad itself?
We did go through Baghdad itself, yes. In and out. Didn't stop.
There was a certain amount of antipathy towards the British in Baghdad, was there not?
Well, I don't remember noticing it. Because, as I say, we didn't stop. We were in and out. We were on wheels and in a big convoy of people. I didn't think we had that known friction with the people in those days.
As you move farther north, you would obviously see more of the oil wells and.
Well, now we went. Oh dear, it's awful. I should remember these names. Well, I don't know. You probably got the names. There were
Mosul.
Before that, much for. We. There was a camp outside where we stopped and said, and oh, Sammy Battiscombe made the battalion go for marching. I'll never forget that. On this sort of oil impregnated ground. And it was terrible, because we finished up with blistered feet and everything. But that's why we're in a route march in the desert. Well, then we then got instructions and orders to move south to a place called Eskikele. And the River Zab. And that's where we took defensive positions up against the possibility of the Germans coming round the Baltic and up to us. Because they were, of course, oil was the big attraction for them. Now this is where we changed into the scene into the snow. Now this is where we had to dig dugouts in the snow, which was an extraordinary thing. It wasn't difficult. You could dig as easily as anything deep down so you could stand up. And with tents, you could lose the whole tent and just walk in and stand up in it. And this is what I recall. We weren't there. We moved before Christmas, didn't we? Yeah.
The conditions that you were living in must have been quite difficult.
Well, again, they were defending that line. There was a line that was dug, and defensive positions along the river bank. Little Zab, or Great Zab. Yeah. But this time, this is when I was chased off as the intendant, as the IO, together with the IO of the 8th and the 9th. Nobody knew anything about the hinterland or the countryside at all. So, Redmond, Brigadier Redmond, was it? Decided that he'd send out recce party of the intelligence officers. So, we three intelligence officers were given area that wise to go and recce what went on, what it was, because they didn't know. And this was very interesting. So we were away for about 4 or 5 days living the land.
What were you discovering?
What happened above the above where we were? What people, if there were any people there? And what they were doing and why? And if it was possible to move on the ground. And of course that's where we run into what we now learn. All the Kurdish villages. And as I say, we three intelligence officers had their own separate territory. I took the whole of the intelligence section with me, and we moved on compass bearings. And whenever we ran into any habitation of any sort, well then, we stopped the truck, put a guard on the truck, armed guard, at every corner of the truck, and went and investigated what was there and who was there. And these were the Kurds, and Kurdish villagers. We didn't know until we got there what they were. And some were very belligerent, so we thank God we've taken our armed guard with us. And some were quite friendly. In fact, one of these chiefs, we stopped with, insisted on us drinking some of his aperitive. But some were not friendly. So we made as best we could a map on blank paper, you see. There was no map of the area at all. We had to make our own map, the three of us. We were all independent working, so we didn't contact each other. We all had separate territory. And I think it was about 4 to 5 days we were away before we came back. And we came back and reported to the brigadier of what we could, what we'd seen and what we knew. And that was quite interesting. In fact, it was very interesting. But it wasn't of any use militarily, really, because if the Germans had come, they would have kept to the water. They were the river.
What was the terrain like that you were living in?
Well, very hilly. I mean, up and down hills, yes. I never got to Mosul, and I don't think anybody else got to Mosul. It was on the map, and we knew it was there, but it was a place where the Germans would likely to come to, if they have succeeded in getting far. But of course they didn't get past Stalingrad. But this was the plan, and this is why we were there, in case. And that's why when the Germans were pushed back eventually at Stalingrad, that's when we packed up home and moved back to the Western Desert.
You were there something like 3 months.
Yeah, I think.
It must have been very boring for the men.
Oh, yes, it was boring for everybody.
How did you try to alleviate those situations?
Well, all the time we had trenches and positions where, on a rota basis, there was some guards and control and exercises on the Great Zed.
Did you have any disciplinary problems within the battalion because of this boredom and difficult conditions?
No, not that I've knowledge from. Not that I recall, no. The Durham Light Infantry troops were not given to anything but good discipline, really. You know, I would say that if they had been Southerners, they could well have been bored and bloody-minded, but with the Durham of the North Country, people are very calm and... I relieved the boredom by taking my intelligence section on recces with on shooting expeditions, trying to shoot gazelle, and they were far too bloody quick for me to hit. But we did. We tried, boars.
Moment, we'll just get said. What rank were you at this time?
I was a second lieutenant, and it was, and I had to serve 18 months as a second lieutenant before I was automatically promoted to full lieutenant with two pips. But it was it was automatic after the time. There was no question of promotion in it, just with length of service, and that had to be, as I said.
You mentioned the fact that it was monotonous and boring. Was that the same as the food? Was food monotonous? There was no change for you? What were you living on?
Army tin food. Like stews and stuff, you know. Whatever the army could provide. But it was only came out of a tin.
In the worst of the winter, how did you keep warm?
Once you got underground, there's no problem. It was warm. You know, the ground, I suppose, itself ensured you were guarded from cold winds and things, you see, if available. But there didn't seem to be any problem at all. As I say, we dug ourselves holes in the ground which were so deep you could stand in them.
Had you much communication from home? Were you getting letters? Parcels?
Yes, we were. Yes, this is true. We were getting parcels, yes. Yes, we were.
As an officer, did you have to check your men's mail and letters, censor them?
Yes. Yeah, going out, yes. They had to be censored, yes, it did.
What kind of thing would
but
you...
But I think company commanders did that. I didn't seem to have any active part in it myself. And they were given into each company, and they were censored by the company commander, I think.
Were senior officers censoring junior officers' letters? Or was it just a men's censorship?
I wouldn't like to answer that, because I don't feel qualified. I don't know. I don't honestly know. I don't remember. Right. And we went back basically the same way as we came.
What date was this?
February 42, I think, yes.
And you retraced your steps?
I'm not sure it was February 42. It was round about Christmas, after Christmas, I know that. We retraced our steps and moved back in. We had the vehicles were made available for us to bus and go back in convoy as we came up.
Did you know where you were heading for?
Yes, we were due to go to Syria. We were due to go, if I remember rightly. Only as a resting area, but of course we never got there. We were caught up on the way by messenger somewhere and given the instructions that the next stop was to be Well, we got off the... We debussed the hell of it and then entrained.
Was this on the canal area, in the canal area?
Yes, that's right. It was, that's right.
Where did you move to from there?
Well, we entrained and went to... Sidi Barani, I think. Does that sound right? Sidi Barani.
You'd be passing through old battlefields now. In
yes,
the desert.
That's right. Yeah.
Were the signs of action that had taken place?
Oh, yes. Yes, there were. Yes. Did this? Oh, yes. Very definitely, yes. Because the Eighth Army. The boys have been back and forward and back and forward. So that was that sort of war and that sort of country. Yes.
You must have realised at this time that you were really going into an action situation.
Yes, we did.
How was this? How were you thinking on at this time?
Yes, we were going to take up a defensive line position. Hence the Ghazala line. And we, the Ghazala line was more line than anything, but all the time it was reinforced by people who could be brought in. So the Australians, New Zealanders, and of course the armoured divisions, We were the first sort of British troops in that line. And this was good, and we formed Gazala line.
What did that entail? What was the terrain like that you were now in?
Oh well, it was sand base with rock interspersed. It wasn't flat sand by any means. In fact, there's very little desert that is. And of course, it's amazing. You because there was it was not flat. It was easy to hide in it. This was an extraordinary thing. It always amazed me how easy it was when you got to know the terrain. It looked just plain flat desert, but it wasn't at all. It was full of hiding places.